This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. America's love affair with manufacturing, making stuff. The Pointer Sisters there, they're not singing about Rosie the Riveter, of course, but you get the point. Is this the real point, though?
We need a strong manufacturing base in America. If we want a strong middle class in America, if we want good jobs, if we want to have a high standard of living.
You hear a lot of that in the 2012 campaign. That's Vice Presidential candidate Paul Ryan speaking at a rally in Youngstown, Ohio. Youngstown, Ohio. Isn't that city one of the unmistakable symbols of America's retreat from manufacturing? Well, it's also the site of a federal initiative actually announced this year called the National Additive Manufacturing Innovation Institute, something the federal government is involved in trying to restart U.S. manufacturing as a driver of the future economy. What would that really take? Gary Pisano and Willie Shih are professors at the Harvard Business School and have written Producing Prosperity, Why America Needs a Manufacturing Renaissance. Gary and Willie, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
Is it a tall order for America to really get back in a big way into manufacturing, Willie?
Well, I think it's going to take some effort. I think both sides in the presidential debate have highlighted the importance of manufacturing. They argue that it's about bringing jobs back. Gary and I argue in our book that the more important reason to invest in manufacturing now is to preserve our ability to innovate in a lot of future technologies.
And we hear a lot, Gary, that, you know, getting back into manufacturing, it's real. There's something sort of more macho about making stuff rather than being consultants or something like that. But this innovation piece that you talk about is really a much deeper issue.
Yeah, we don't buy the argument, first of all, that, you know, manufacturing in and of itself is better because it's physically physical product. It's real. There's not more value per se created from manufactured products versus services. We think that's a myth that we dismiss. Where we argue and where we're trying to change the debate on manufacturing is getting people to recognize that it's often very integral to innovation. And if we lose the capacity to manufacture, we will lose our capability to innovate in many sectors.
You look at Foxconn, you know what that company is. I think it's the biggest manufacturing company in the world over in China, makes Apple products and other high-tech products. Is it possible for the United States to declare from the bully pulpit, we are going to develop a technology that will render even a factory like Foxconn obsolete with our advanced robotics that can basically take the worker out of the equation entirely? Do we have that kind of capability? Can we aim that high, Willie?
I think if you look inside a Foxconn factory, what you see is armies of young people who are doing a lot of mechanical assembly. It is the epitome, in my mind, of the substitution of labor for capital. It's organizing a large workforce of people to do quick assembly. And if what you want to do is sell 5 million iPhones on the first weekend, it's that type of flexibility and dexterity in your supply chain that you need. If you wanted to replace that with more automated assembly, I think it's a challenge, right? Because what the Foxconns of the world have become very good at is those quick ramps and quick product cycles. In order to develop that type of flexibility for that type of work, it would be very expensive in the U.S.
So where should we focus, Gary?
Yeah, and I liked your question before because we can't be trying to do the things that China or another country can do well by throwing armies of people at it. There's no prosperity for us in trying to do that, even with robotics. We've got to be focusing in those areas that are complex and you know, so complex others can't do it, ideally. Emerging technologies, nanotechnology, biotechnology, and probably, you know, many others in the future. They're hard. The specifics are hard to predict. And we don't advocate the government try to target very specific technologies or sectors, but to make investments in basic and applied research related to manufacturing that will enable the private sector to build on and find its opportunities.
But to use an American cliche, it's hard for me to imagine, honey, pack me a lunch. I'm going off to the nanotech factory. You know, I'll be home around 5. It's not going to work that way.
No, and the world of manufacturing is changing a lot. And the manufacturing of today and into the future is very much knowledge work. It requires very sophisticated workers. The workers don't actually as much work on the product as they work on the machines that make the product. They need advanced skills in computer programming, mathematics, geometry. So the manufacturing of today and tomorrow looks really different than the manufacturing of a couple of decades ago.
And China, Asia, and Japan account for something on the order of 30 to 40% of all engineers produced in the world. The U.S. is down to something like 10%. Willie, how do we
possibly
compete?
That's right. Production of engineers in China is much higher. But I think even in China, they recognize the capabilities of the U.S. engineering education system is still superior. I think we still turn out among the best engineers in the world. But in terms of quantity, it's much lower. What that means, therefore, is when you go to Asia and walk through factory floors, you see a lot of engineers working on the factory floors, working on fairly sophisticated tools. It argues for the type of work that we have to do in the U.S., which is much more, as Gary described it, higher level work, systems type of thinking, more complex engineering.
We've lost our what you call industrial commons in the United States that that go back to the old defense industries. How would we replace those?
Well, I think the industrial commons, as we describe it in this book, really is a manifestation of the capabilities in your workforce, your supply chain, your suppliers, and so on. Commons develop over the longer term through investment, both by the public sector and the private sector, in terms of education, in terms of long-term research programs, in terms of investment in the people and your supplier network that are about growing capabilities. We've lost it in many sectors. It will take some time to grow back. The first thing that Gary and I are really highlighting is the importance to business and public sector leaders to be aware of this issue and work on preserving it.
Well, you're both very hopeful, and it's great to have this conversation. Willie Shih is a professor at the Harvard Business School. Gary Pisano, are you also at Harvard?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you're both from Harvard Business School. Willie Shih and Gary Pisano are author of the book Producing Prosperity, Why America Needs a Manufacturing Renaissance. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Great. Thank you.
This is The Takeaway. From the lofty altitudes of the HBS, that would be the Harvard Business School, to the earthly domain of Willoughby Hills, Ohio, John Rampe is president of Torque Transmission and joins us now. John, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you, John.
You may remember John as one of our Ohio 7, the group of 7 voters from Lake County, Ohio, you heard from all last week. But we wanted to ask John Rampe, what's it mean to have a manufacturing renaissance in the United States? Your company, Torque Transmission, excuse me, how many people do you employ?
We have 18 people.
18 people. Now, you know, the idea that America should make stuff as opposed to just be a service economy, sometimes it feels to me like that's just a bit of macho and that there's no real economic rationale there. Do you think the United States has unique advantages in the world in developing manufacturing right here?
Oh, absolutely. We've got the innovative talent as well as the manufacturing skill talent to make just about anything in the world.
We just heard from a couple of professors at Harvard Business School that manufacturing is an innovation center in the sense that technological developments in the manufacturing process often make it actually into the product line. Has that ever happened for you where something you've developed in making something has become proprietary technology that's helped your business in other ways?
Oh, yes. I mean, we've had things that we've been involved in with a customer and that we follow it through, and there's some offshoots or some adaptations that make it into our product line as standard. Unfortunately, we're not cutting-edge technology, but even so, innovation plays a pretty important role.
What sort of investment, then, do you see from the federal government as being necessary for you to extend your manufacturing capability, hire more people, and, independent of demand, really invest in an infrastructure that's going to make the United States more of a manufacturing center?
You use the word independent of demand. I mean, demand drives everything. Without demand, we don't have a product to sell. So for the government to come along and say, well, we'll invest money in your company so you can hire people, that's fine, but we still have to have customers. And the customers is what counts. Without him, we don't have revenue.
Are there incentives that could be brought in that would allow you to modernize those sorts of things independent of, say, depreciation allowances, the tax advantages that already exist?
Those can be very, very helpful. What else? I mean, if it was a perfect world, I'd love to have the government give me development grants to improve manufacturing processes. That would be a dramatic step forward for us. Do I anticipate such a thing happening? No.
Let me ask you an economics political question, okay? As our audience will recall, you were on the fence leaning towards Mitt Romney when we last spoke, right?
Right, correct.
Now, given a choice between Mitt Romney, whose experience at Bain Capital is acquiring companies, in a sense, leveraging them and then selling them, versus the president who has declared he wants to invest in infrastructure and actual manufacturing capability, is one to be preferred over the other on this manufacturing issue? Is Mitt Romney or Barack Obama obviously more pro-manufacturing?
My feeling is that they are both pro-manufacturing because manufacturing is right now leading the economic upturn. I don't know how much Obama has really cared about manufacturing prior to a year ago. I think this is more just political expediency than anything else.
And in Romney's case, I mean, he's bought a lot of companies, put a lot of them into debt, and then resold them. That doesn't necessarily buy a lot of machinery.
No, it doesn't. All of these ventures or leverage buyout type of companies, et cetera, have saddled companies with tremendous amounts of debt and then cast them loose upon the sea to fend for themselves, and a lot of them haven't. Debt is going to kill any company today. If we go into a deflationary spiral, which I think that we will, any company that's loaded down with debt is already kind of is dead.
So then the takeaway here is that neither of these guys, Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, has, from your perspective, an acceptable track record on supporting manufacturing.
That's true. Exactly.
Well, thanks for the happy thoughts, John.
Right.
You're going to be watching the debate tonight?
I will indeed.
All right, we'll check in with you. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, John.
John Rampe, president of Torque Transmission and one of our Ohio 7 voters, talking about manufacturing. And manufacturing is an issue in the presidential campaign. You're a part of this conversation, of course. What should we make in the United States? What should we make again? Or what do you think we should get involved in? Or tell us a story of manufacturing in your community, a business that moved in and makes stuff, not just services stuff. 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Later this hour.
You know what? If they want to get at each other, I'm fine with me. I think it has to be organic to a certain extent. You know, I don't really want to be the school marm. So we'll see.
She's no school marm. She's Candy Crowley, moderator of tonight's presidential debate. That's later this hour on The Takeaway. Stay with us. As always, we want to hear from you. And, of course, as we ask every time there's one of these presidential debates, what will you be listening for? What do President Obama and Republican nominee Mitt Romney need to say? What's the bar? Who needs to cross it? What are your expectations? What does your candidate need to do? Or what does any candidate need to do to win your vote? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
I know that we can. I know darn well we can work it out. We can work it out. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. And why can't we? If we want to get together, we can work it out.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.